Good morning. Happy Father's Day to all you fathers and grandfathers and stepfathers out here. We are grateful for you. I have mentioned this before, but I think it's worth repeating that I have had, on more than one occasion, some fathers let me know that when it comes to church on Father's Day, they had, over time, been conditioned to have a feeling of dread start to sort of well up inside them. And it's been a variety of dads who shared that with me. A few were stay-at-home dads. Some were single dads. Some were just good, invested fathers who, in their marriage, they try to share the responsibilities equally. And the reason that they described showing up to church on Father's Day with a sense of dread is because of the contrast that they saw between the messages they heard on Mother's Day and the messages they heard on Father's Day. So on Mother's Day, they would hear messages, this was their description, that sounded something like this. The preacher would gush about moms, and rightfully so, because they are amazing angels from on high, saints who sacrificially serve. They lay it all on the line every day, and I'm not arguing with that, and they weren't arguing with that, but what they felt like they heard when they showed up on Father's Day sounded something like this. You bunch of deadbeat, do-nothing, never-around dads better get your head in the game, get your stuff in order, and show up for once in your child's life, or by the time they grow up, their theme song will be Cats in the Cradle, and your grown-up little boy will never be coming home because you were never home. He grew to be just like you, dads. He grew to be just like you. Now, I realize that's a really old reference. And so, if you don't know the song that I'm referencing, Google it, or don't, because it's really depressing. I'm just going to warn you on the front end. So let me reassure you that this message is not one of those messages. It is a message of recognition and celebration, but I also hope to reframe the discussion and others like it by the time we're done. Now, before we go any further, I want to share with you a picture and a story about some dads who showed up in a really cool way this last year. These are fathers and grandfathers and stepdads and uncles of students, and they're gathered outside schools. It was across Jackson, Mississippi, and they are there to cheer kids on as they arrived for standardized testing day. Now, if you've been around school with kids or teachers know that one of the days that is the biggest beatdown of the year, or usually it's a week, is standardized testing week. And so the district helped call in reinforcements, if you will, and there is an organization that they called upon. The organization is called Watch Dogs. And dogs, let's go back to that image before. If we can. Okay, it's kind of cut off a little bit. We're still on our temporary projector as the permanent one is fixed, and so we're losing just a little bit. But it's an acronym that stands for Dads of Great Students, and it's an initiative trying to help organize and continue to keep dads involved and active in the educational process and safety process of the kids. And so these dads showed up, and you can see they formed a gauntlet for the kids to go through, and they would give them high fives and low fives, and they would cry out words of encouragement as they were going through. You can do this. You've got this. You're going to do great today. And the principal said that you could see the kids would light up, and this look of excitement and encouragement would come across their faces as they would go through, and you could tell that it gave their attitudes a boost as they went in to take standardized testing. Now, this is just an aside, but I'm thinking if any of you want to organize a gauntlet every Sunday that I could run through before I get up to preach, and I'll do a high five, I'll do a low five, you can pat me on the back, whatever you want to do, and I'm going to give you a few lines or whatever comes to mind. Here's a few lines that you can say to me as I go through that. You can do this. I'm praying for you because heaven knows you need it. It can't possibly be as bad as the last few sermons. Just remember, Bert, there's nowhere to go but up, or whatever comes to mind for you. But here's the thing, going back to that image of the dads, as heartwarming as those images are, my hope and prayer is that we get to the point as a society and as a church and in our minds where these kinds of images are encouraging and they're exciting, but that we don't think about them or talk about them as exceptional, but we think and talk about them as expected. That this is just a picture of what it means not to be an extraordinary dad, but an ordinary dad. A good, involved, engaged father. And I think that mindset is an important shift. And I want to come back to that in a minute. But first, if you have your Bibles, open up to Luke chapter 17. We're taking a little break from the I Am series, even though I kept the image in the background. We're going to read what is probably a pretty unfamiliar parable to you. So there's some parables that all of us know, and this one isn't the most popular in any parable list that I've read, but it's important nonetheless in what it teaches. Suppose one of you has a servant plowing or looking after the sheep. Will he say to the servant when he comes in from the field, "Come along now and sit down to eat"? Won't he rather say, "Prepare my supper, get yourself ready, and wait on me while I eat and drink, and after that you may eat and drink"? Will he thank the servant because he did what he was told to do? So you also, when you've done everything you were told to do, should say, "We are unworthy servants. We have only done our duty." Okay, as we start out, I don't want you to get bogged down in the imagery that Jesus uses, because Jesus is tapping into a well-known image that everyone in the ancient world would have known, the image of the servant or slave and the masters, and the people would have understood this, but it doesn't mean that God endorses slavery or the abuse and inequity that came with it. So if it helps, I want to give you a slightly updated slant into this image. Suppose a woman owns a business, and she's looking to hire help, and so she posts an ad, and it sounds like this: "Wanted, a personal assistant who will be tasked with a number of jobs, from organizing and keeping my schedule, running my errands, preparing meals, or any other tasks that I decide are necessary to help free me to fulfill my mission with my business." This is a salaried position that will work a minimum of 40 hours per week, 8 to 9 hour days. Usually the pay is not only competitive with similar jobs, it exceeds what they make. It has generous benefits, insurance, retirement, paid vacation, personal days. If interested, send your resume too. And the post is made, and a lot of people are interested. A lot of people are unemployed, they're out of work. This sounds good, because not only does it make more than being unemployed, but it makes more than most similar jobs like it. Sounds good, sounds interesting, sounds challenging. Lots of people apply. And one person applies and they eagerly want the job and they interview and they get the job. So what would you expect them to do when they get the job that they sought out and they eagerly desired and they interviewed for? What would you expect them to do? The job that they sought out and they applied for and they interviewed for and they were eagerly excited to do. So what would happen if that person who took this brand new job, that's a salary position, a minimum starting at about 40 hours a week expected, and they start in on their first day and they work around 4 hours and they do half the job, and then they come in and they kick back and they say, "Now, when do you serve me?" I know that you hired me under the assumption that I would work about 8-9 hours a day. And I know that's what I signed up for and agreed for. But I kind of assumed that we both knew that I was really only interested in about 4 hours a day and half the work. Is that okay? Does that sound good? And then maybe we would flip roles and you'd take care of me and answer to me, and I'd tell you what to do. And would you expect that new employee, when they were expected to do the job that they just agreed to do, would you expect them, when you say, "No, it's actually, you know, a full-time job with all of these responsibilities I laid out," would you expect them to act bitter or put out? Or would you expect them to do the job they were hired to do? And not only do the job, but to have a good attitude about it, show some initiative in it, to sound virtually like every Chick-fil-A employee that you've ever encountered. "No, my pleasure, sir. It was my pleasure, ma'am. Seriously, it's my pleasure. It's my pleasure. It's my pleasure. I'm just doing my job." Now, as with any parable, if you push it too far, then the metaphor can start to break apart. So in this parable, Jesus is emphasizing the mindset of someone who's merely doing his job, and he's saying that you shouldn't expect a lot of thanks. And yet we see a lot of places, other places in the gospel, where Jesus heaps on praise and encouragement for someone's deep faith or deep generosity. In fact, you may remember at the end of the parable of the sheep and the wolves, that Jesus ends that parable with the great invitation and affirmation, "Well done, my good and faithful servant." And here the disciples are referred to as servants or slaves, and that is one of the metaphors used to describe followers of Jesus. But we also know that there are plenty of places where we're not just described as servants. We are described as children. In what we heard last week from John 10, he is the good shepherd and we are the beloved sheep. Or what shows up in John 15 a little bit later when Jesus tells us to love one another as I have loved you, that deep, overflowing love. He ends up saying, "You know what? I no longer call you servants anymore, but I call you friends." So don't take this parable beyond what it's trying to teach. The takeaway point is this: God, in the end, doesn't owe us for the service that we give. This is not a monetary transaction that's going on. What we have is by the grace of God, and our service is a thankful response to the grace and the life and the hope and the purpose that he gives. If it were a monetary transaction, then it would be us that owe him. But that's not the way this is. We are people brought into his life by his mercy and grace. So instead of an attitude of entitlement and an approach of laziness and a mindset that says, what's the bare minimum required? We have an attitude like we see in the apostles in Acts that are encouraged and even excited and thankful for the opportunity to serve, and when the time comes, suffer for the name of Christ. Because that's what it means to do their duty. That's what it means to live out the life of faith. So I want to come back to the discussion of fatherhood. I think we've got a lot of amazing, caring, compassionate, loving, serving, present, engaged, providing dads in here. And we honor you for all the ways and the various ways that plays out in this room that you live out that life as a father. But as I mentioned before, and I think this parable of the servant reminds, I also don't want to talk about fatherhood in ways that describe as extraordinary what should be ordinary. Just a regular part of being a father. I don't want to describe as exceptional what should be expected. And I can't help but think we do a disservice to the institution of fatherhood when we talk or act as if things that should be normal are exceptional. Because when we do that, in the end, it makes them sound optional. And God thinks too highly of what it means to be a father and a mother and a parent to talk about them in any ways that recognize them as anything other than living out your Christ-honoring duty. So dads, for all the times that you do or you have or you will wake up in the middle of the night to help with a crying kid, and all the times that you took a day off of work to stay home with a sick kid, and all the loads of laundry that you've done, and all the games of catch that you've played, or the games you've watched, or the games you've coached, or the piano lessons, or guitar lessons, or dance lessons that you've been the carpool person for, all the diapers that you've changed, all the meals that you've cooked, all the times that you've given baths and changed clothes and combed hair, the times when you've stayed home so your wife could go out and have time with her friends, or the times when you said no to an extra activity on a weeknight or a weekend with your buddies because you said, no, this is an important time with my family. For all of those things that I've mentioned and the countless other things that I've not mentioned that you do, we honor you and we recognize you and we give thanks for you because you did your duty. You did what God calls you to do. You did your job as a dad, the job any good dad would do. Now, of course, you did it in your own special, gifted, goofy way, and we love you for that. And you threw in some good dad jokes, which are really bad jokes, but we're thankful for that too. But you did your duty, and we always knew you would. And for that, we give you thanks. And isn't that a mindset we need, not just for fathers and not just for mothers, but throughout our society, the mindset of the servant, the mindset we need with our faith and with our church? I hope and pray that we get to the point where we don't shy away from words like obligation and duty and responsibility and commitment. but that those roll off of our tongues easily. I pray that you will serve in some capacity, that you will serve, whether that is tutoring a kid at Silver City or helping provide a meal at River City Ministries, or maybe that's teaching a class in our children's ministry this fall, or signing up to be a part of the children's church and praise zone rotation. Even if you don't have a kid in that age anymore, even if you don't have any kids at all, if that's co-leading a life group or mentoring a young couple, that's standing up or beside people in need in our society, standing up for justice, that kind of thing, love in action, service to others, that shouldn't, among people of faith, make us exceptional. That's simply what's expected of every follower of Jesus. So give generously of your time, share your God-given talents with others, plan ahead with your money so that you're not only a regular giver, but that you can give extravagantly when opportunities arise, when you see new possibilities and ways that what you have can be a blessing to people around you and those who don't have. Find joy in generosity, but it is a sad indictment when we treat generosity, whether it's in word or spirit or grace or giving, as the exception instead of the rule. So instead of lowering the bar of what it means to follow Jesus, the encouragement this morning is to raise our game. And more importantly, let God lift us up. So my challenge this morning is to go out today and be the best father or mother or spouse or sibling or friend or coworker, employee, employer that you can possibly be. It is to the delight of the Lord, because when you do, you are humbly, faithfully, simply doing your duty.